Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our budget work session on March 22nd, 2023. Let's stand with the pledge and the moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Okay, so board members and members of the public, one, if you're here and you're hungry, please grab some pizza because we have a lot of it there. So I want to make sure everyone's nourished and working on all the cylinders. So tonight, again, we don't have on here, it says budget changes since March 15th meeting. We don't have any changes or anything that have occurred at this point. I think really a lot of the discussion, and certainly we can go any direction that the board wants to go. I know the board had some questions for the schools, and so we've got representatives, got Dr. Gretz here, we got two school board members, Dr. Kelly and Ms. Johnson here to answer questions as well. So we're happy to go any which way the board wants to go from this point. You saw an email that I sent the board, and I can pull these things up here a little bit too before we get started. Let me just pull it up. So the board had some questions, let me get that out of the way. The board had some questions about the school buses. The previous board meeting, I sent you an email with what we had for what the county had approved for funding every year for school buses, going back to 2013, going back to current. And again, that was just the county's funding for school buses. And in that email to the board, I said that school buses, you know, going back to 2013, were around 80,000 per bus. Now they're probably around, Dr. Gretz, 110 maybe?
Yeah, 110 to 130.
Yeah, 110 to 130. Again, this sheet right here really shows in some time frames, the amount of buses purchases. So you got the time frame right here, the amount of buses purchased in that time frame, whether it's a single year, multi-year, what have you. Experience years basically means how old the buses are at that point. Total buses, and then out of those total buses column, how many buses are in the everyday use column. And then, you know, you have under here, they've got a column for 15-year VDOT replacement cycle, 20-year VDOT replacement cycle. And then the second page is just kind of a clear line item of all buses that were purchased for the schools, whether it's county CIP or schools operational funds. And again, so it's got everything from buses purchased to retrofitting older buses with AC. So if I remember correctly, I did a quick add of buses in this period. I want to say it was 59 buses is I think what I counted in between this 11-year period of time. So again, does the board have any questions? Anything you want to confirm with the schools on buses?
How many buses are used daily for
transporting students?
Yeah.
84?
Does
that sound right?
Yeah, let's see here.
I thought 84 was like the total that you had.
And no, you're
was
right.
Like,
you're right.
84 is the total that you have, and I think it's like 60, 62.
That's right.
You're right. 25.
I'll confirm it here in just a second.
What 68 is in the everyday use column on that, that total 68.
68.
And then total buses, I don't know. So everyday use is 68. So what's that? So that's going to be.
Oh, yeah.
81.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
There we go. I'm going with it.
And 49, 24, and 8.
Yep. And then I think in the budget for this year, we have 580,000 budgeted, which I guess equates to about 5 buses.
4 to 5.
Yeah. So that's kind of the information on buses. And
real quickly, back to the imprinted screen, please.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure it's through the bus type, but in the 2018-22, you purchased 28, but you used 24 regularly. What are the other 4 buses doing?
I have to find out. I really don't know. It wasn't here during that time.
I mean, we've had some that are decommissioned.
Yeah, is that an error? I mean, because in these years, you see, you purchase 10 buses every day, 10, 15, 15, 15. And there's 6, 7, 7, so there might be a little, something might be off a little bit. But.
And the numbers are different because y'all purchased some used buses as well, I believe,
yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we have accidents or buses that go out of commission, so it could be some of that too. But my guess is on that particular, that there's probably some sort of typo, but I'll check it out.
And like I said, the only thing when I brought it up I was getting at is so we can know and pretty much factor what we're going to need each year. If it's 4, if it's 3, you know, if we're on a 20-year replacement cycle, just so we don't have the ebbs and flows. I mean, in 7 years, there's going to be 49 buses replaced there. If I remember my math,
yeah, 68 daily, not including athletic trips.
Correct.
Well, can you run out the this chart so that it would go to 2023, how many, 24, how many buses we need, 25, 26, on up, so that we can kind of do a little bit of a...
And I think they have that a little bit on their CIP request. I think for the next 2 years they have about...
5 for the next 2.
I think they have about the equivalent of 5 buses for 24 and 25. Mm-hmm. And then I think it goes down to 3 buses a year after that,
yeah.
I believe.
Well, let's put it on a chart and put it CIP. That's column for CIP.
And then 15-year versus 20-year, is there a particular logic, or is that just a breakpoint that you had?
There is a replacement schedule given to us by the BDOE. Again, I probably have to verify with Valerie.
I think they recommend 15, but we were going 20 on some of ours just because of where we were financially.
And I assume that should be BDOE replacement cycle, not VDOT replacement cycle, unless I'm...
I have checked.
Because it says VDOT on this chart.
Some of the bus driver stuff is managed by the Department of Transportation.
Okay, all right. Any further questions on school buses? Okay.
So, what's the budget this year?
$580,000 is what is in the budget right now. Okay. Yep. And then I know Mr. O'Brien asked to see this. The total school budget inflation adjusted going back to 1998. So the blue line is, again, going up to 22, which is right here, is actual numbers. And the red line reflects inflation adjusted starting back to 1998 and what the inflation adjusted amount would be in 2022.
Yeah, it was surprising. I mean, when you compare it to the inflation adjusted budget in general for the county and the relationship to the schools, it's a difference. But then, you know, kind of trying to, and I'm prefacing this so the school board members and the administration can pipe in, but it would seem that technology probably has played a large role. I think that there was, you know, decades of sort of the question as to whether teachers were being paid well enough or not, maybe some catch-up period behind that. And then, of course, mandated changes in teaching that maybe forced things to change, you know, the types of students that you have to take on and the teaching staff that you needed for it. But when you look at it from the perspective of how dollars were being spent back then and where they're being spent, or the difference between how they're being spent now it's substantial for sure. So it's an interesting, not what I thought I would see, but it's interesting.
I think also if you look at the date, that's when the ARPA money came in from the government for, because of
the boost.
I'm
discounting those years there because they seem a little weird from that standpoint. I'm looking more at just the gap in between. And it did even itself out for certain. Certainly you'd have to say that it evened itself out in part because the school budget was dropped in 11, 12 in terms of the trend line. But I'll leave it to this, to school administration and board members to pipe in as well too. So.
Well, I'll just say, you said for decades of trying to increase the pay rate or however you said it, being behind, there was certainly a period on that chart where we were far from behind, where we were a very well, strongly paid school system in comparison with the ones around us. So, I mean, weren't we like around 06 and 08 in that range? We were amongst the best paid school systems in the region.
I've heard that.
Region.
I didn't speak to that. Obviously, I wasn't here.
Yeah, that's.
It was when we were the fastest growing county
in
the area. When we were the fastest growing county in the area, we made jumps. But,
It is.
Then we stifled and grew none between 10 and about 18.
I'm talking about pay rate, not just increase in it. In pay rate.
Correct.
In comparison to areas.
But that was also, like I said, in connection with when we were fastest growing.
And I would think that, I mean, I haven't studied this, but I would think that the year that the General Assembly implemented the support cap would probably impact this line tremendously.
Oh.
Yeah, and I realize this county staff did this, not school staff. So you probably just saw this as well today. So
correct. Yeah, we just
realized you're kind of put on the spot.
Yeah, right? We just did this today. We did send it to him. I mean, it was not long ago.
Right.
We just finished it today. And again, this is just using, again, basically actuals from 98 to 2022, what their actual spend is every year.
And I'll be honest with you. I got here in 98. When I first got here, compensation was good. But if you looked around our buildings and facilities, it was lacking. I mean, there were big gaps in the facilities. Just repairs not being done and that sort of thing. And so I think over time you saw where compensation might have started to level off, and then facilities improved. And then, of course, we had the economic downturn, which resulted in the compensation becoming stagnant, really.
But when facilities fall under CIP?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just that. I mean, it was just basic maintenance.
Maintenance is what she's talking about.
And how much of this, I mean, because again, I think the big bump in 2009-10, I mean, that's kind of a few factors. You got kind of the downturn happening of the economy. You've got the new high school coming online. I mean, granted, there were some other schools going by the wayside, but I'm sure there were some big expenses with that as well.
That's also the year the support cap was implemented, 2009-10, right?
At the end of 10, right?
Yeah. And I don't know what the response was here, but I mean, localities were faced immediately. Fluvanna was faced immediately with having to adjust for over a $900,000 shortfall in state revenue.
I mean, we had an enormous
soaked it up or found it otherwise, and I'm sure that's reflected. I'd have to go back and look.
You know, it's funny, we don't have the comparison for surrounding divisions here, but my guess here is if we found a way to localize this, because this is aggregate spend and then adjusted for inflation, but of course we also have by surrounding counties differences in the number of students we have, and so this isn't a cost per student index, but my guess here, if we found a way to normalize and inflation adjust, that really in that 8-10 space is when we'd have the divergence between us and the surrounding counties. I mean, right now we have one of the lowest, based on my memory of the presentations that you guys provided, we don't have an exceptionally high per student expenditure, this county by comparison to others. that it's considerably higher in a lot of the surrounding counties. And given that 90% of our spend is in instruction, which nowadays does incorporate a lot of technology, you know, that's just one of those things where if on average you're not spending that much per student and 90% is in instruction, it fundamentally holds that, like, there's not a lot of headroom as it relates to compensation. But my guess here is that the divergence between us and other surrounding counties happened sort of post support cap, and, you know, with everyone being considerably shy about the way to spend money given an economic downturn, and we've seen a couple of them since that remain, I think, as conservative.
Two of the biggest considerations right now, and I know two of the counties we compare to all the time, are Louisa and Goochland. And the west side of Henrico filled up and it started spilling into Goochland. And they got a lot of stuff going on down there where they're drawing in a lot of income on that end of the county. And then Zion's Crossroads came online, and Zion's Crossroads has been an economic boost for Louisa. You know, I'm sitting there, I've been in class today. So, and one of the things we had the person come in and talking about SOQs, and you and I have talked about it a lot, Dr. Retz, but he brought me a sheet today that explained it, just had it all written down with one principal per 600 kids. And I looked at him and said, well, better be a powerful individual if they're going to control 600 kids. Yeah, that's pretty unrealistic as a goal.
I can't control one.
Don't even go there if they're in my house. Anyway, but I was trying to think what I was going to say. Everybody is saying the exact same things in the class, and I'm taking, and I hate to keep saying it that way. I mean, we got Prince William, one of the richer counties, and one chart that they gave us, and I was going to ask you for a number, and I apologize for saying it now, but it's the first time I've seen you since I got back. They did the average salary of an elementary education person, teacher, and the median was like 53. I don't know what ours or where ours falls on the thing.
Like what? You're talking actual salaries.
Actual salaries of teachers in elementary classrooms. And the average or median salary, I think the average was 54 and the median was 53. But the thing that caught my eye, and I told them this, you know, of the top eight, two of them are Richmond and Charlottesville. And Albemarle, I know it, and far behind Charlottesville. So
you're saying the average teacher salary in Prince William was 53?
No.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, for the whole state. For the whole, no. For the, I'm sorry, I didn't say it very well. For the whole state. They did a big graph.
I got you.
For the whole state. And the top eight up here, they were either Northern Virginia,
yeah,
with
sure,
Richmond being number five and Charlottesville, or six. No, they were five because Charlottesville was eight in the state. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
We can't get in bidding wars with those guys.
That a great deal is the level of experience of your staff.
Absolutely.
And
that's what I'm saying.
That kind of switch for us over the last couple of years.
We have so much of the curve under the first 3 years of experience.
Well, it's because people that were able to retired, except for some of us that aren't that bright.
Well, I mean, to your point, that 90%. 88-90% is instructional based. You would have to assume that if we had similar numbers from surrounding school systems around here, you would, I think you were trying to say there'd be that divergence, but you would see, skip the divergence, you would see a similar trend in terms of the spend that other school systems had and how they align up now. And then fundamentally, when you look at it and you say, we're all school systems are facing challenges attracting new staff, you know, that then adds to, you know, the fact that even with the efforts that have been made, and, you know, states made some major efforts as well too, that we're, you know, it's a catch-up game. it's definitely being caught up because I think there were.
It's getting caught up in some way.
Yeah.
But it's still far lacking behind with this antiquated SOQ system,
yeah,
especially after they cut it back in 2010. And I will give the young man from the state credit. He sat there and listened to everyone, and I turned around and was in his ear, though. I mean, not in a bad way, but it was like, you know, thank you for giving me these numbers, mm-hmm. but really? 24 to 1 in a kindergarten classroom? That's a lot of shoes to tie and a lot of noses to wipe. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to spend your day doing that the whole time.
Yeah.
And that was the ratio in the kindergarten classroom, mm-hmm. first grade classroom. I was like,
yeah, I think one of the startling things for me is that, you know, we passed an obscene number here to bring you all to indicate what we need, but that need was based on not being dead last. It wasn't even being in the middle or robust. That was just like, let's get above dead last in the competitive set. And then it's shocking.
The other thing that we had shown up today was LCI. They did a big thing on LCI.
What does that stand for?
Local composite index, where the percent we're supposed to pay at the school budget at a minimum. What is our LCI?
40.
I thought it was 40 or 41 somewhere, and I couldn't remember exactly what it was. But, you know, Goochland's bright blue. They got the best LCI in the state. That means they pay more, but that means also that they have the capability of paying more.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that we're comparing ourselves to mm-hmm. were Goochland at 0.8, Albemarle, whatever they are, but they were not the darkest blue, but mm-hmm. they're pretty dang blue. And then Louisa was just under Albemarle. Mm-hmm. And then we were about the color of that green right there. You know, I mean, we're in the median. I mean, we're in the middle. We're not at the top. We're not at the bottom. But anyway.
I'd also say, and I know Eric said that in our salary study, we also didn't use Buckingham. And the rationale was because we're not losing people to them. But that's a part of the scenario, too, because if they're lower than us, that means we should be receiving people from them. If there's a migration out, there should be a migration in. And it's hard to not put the ones who are lower than you into the study and be sure you got all the data.
Did you say we were losing people to Buckingham?
I didn't say that. They're
coming here.
Moselle, what I said was they were not a county that we were losing people to, and that's why they weren't a part of their salary study. And I said then that would suggest that they would be losing people to us, so they should be a part of the study. There's inflow and there's outflow. You gotta study it both ways.
Yeah, I don't.
What would be the benefit if you put Buckingham in? What would be the benefit?
We did gather on like the 11 surrounding counties, and then needed to find a way to make it both tractable and readable and realistic of the competitive set. So could we have included Buckingham? Sure. I think that fundamentally what's going to happen there is that we're just prop, so instead of being not dead last, then we're not dead second to last, right? On some of these things, and in some cases, they may pay higher than ours. So I'll acknowledge that's a blind spot given the way that we functionally narrow the competitive set. I still think that in broad strokes, it was a useful way to get from kind of much wider to these are the people that we're winning and losing against in most scenarios. And so it still is a more realistic competitive set than maybe the broad 11. But I fully acknowledge that we could have left them in and it would have painted a slightly different picture. But I can't imagine, given the density of the data that we have, given the competitive set we chose, I don't think it's going to change the narrative one bit if we had gone back in and added them.
For some reason, I'm trying to find it right now. I kind of was recalled that the per student spend at Buckingham was not very far different.
Was that in your presentation that you did?
The per pupil for Buckingham is $13,547, and ours is $12,963.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was like when I remember looking at the number and being kind of surprised by that and saying,
they have a great deal of federal funds.
No, I was going to say, they get more. Their LCI is less than ours, correct?
Their LCI is 32.
And our LCI has dropped, right?
It's gone up. It was 38, and now it's 40, I think.
Means we get less from other sources, right?
Yes.
From the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised when that happened. I think everyone was.
Mm-hmm. Is it not in this one? Or is that the beginning?
It's in the budget book. I'm not sure if it's in that.
I don't think it was in that.
Okay.
It's page three of the budget work session from January 26 has the comparative page spends.
Yeah. And logically, Kelly, you say, you well, there's a per student spend of this. And 85-90% is
January
26th. For instruction.
Yeah.
Then presumably,
what is it? I'm like, oh, good school.
You would think it would correlate with the salary structure, right?
For the salary structure?
No, just
you would think. I don't know. I mean, just guess tell me. I'm not a school budget expert.
Yeah, I mean, yes. If the lower CPI, like the amount that we spend per pupil, ultimately translates directly into compensation, given the fact that all divisions have some enormous amount of their like revenue tied to salary structures.
And per pupil spend does not include any CIP, right?
No debt service.
It generally doesn't. I've seen one graph that included a county, a division that includes its own building expenses tied into that. I haven't seen it in a couple of years like that, but generally does not include CIP or building construction. There's just one county in the surrounding area that had its own debt service for some reason at the school level.
Yeah, when the state calculates it, they don't use CIP or debt service as part of that calculation.
Yeah, it's too, varies too much.
The thing that's gonna, when Buckingham gets so much federal money, the thing that's tied to that, though, is that they have to spend that money in a very certain way. And so they may or may not tie that to instruction, I mean, compensation, because that's going to force them to hire more teachers with Title I money or to do other things with those federal dollars, like special ed services, that might not translate necessarily into compensation.
Kelly's trying to find the reason.
So I just dropped.
You just dropped
it in
there?
Yeah. Well, I dropped something, and you can tell me if it's the right one or not.
Fortunately, this also has the distribution of staff by tenure, in the event that you all are interested in that transition from retirees to newer teachers.
Is this it?
Yeah, page 3 has the our relative per pupil expenditure.
And this data is from 21. The 22 data won't come out until sometime in April.
Like I said, the chart I saw today, and I wish I could have called you earlier just to get that number from you, just to see where we are on that.
Yeah.
Because that would be interesting to see, because what's our starting salary now?
50,000 was the most recent number we have.
From far cry from where I started in 19.
Oh, yeah.
But I can remember my cousin talking about his salary for the year was 3,500.
Yeah. My guess is that our median, if you want to use median as an estimate, and given the density of where people are under the curve, that we're probably somewhere in the like 54-ish from a like median teacher perspective, regardless of like level. I can't break it down to elementary versus others, but I don't have a reason to suspect.
We have that information. I just don't have it with
me. Trust me. The folks that get the COCA did not like me talking about it because I'm going, hey, guys, don't get the COCA. And they're complaining about they only get so much of it. I said, we get zero. But I said, this place right here is 30 minutes from us, and this one right here is 30 minutes from us, and we got to compete with them.
By the way, if my numbers are right, and it's quick math this afternoon, if I understand our median, I don't know if it's regional or area income, and there's a lot of conversation, and this goes to affordability for teachers to live. A lot of conversation about those 124 apartments at Colonial Circle being for teachers and Fluvan employees. The way I understand it, it's about $54,000 a year is that median income, 60% of median income. And we'd be pricing teachers out of living in that place that was being built in part because of being said we have teachers that need to live there.
I'm sure their numbers will go up as median income around here goes up. I don't know. I mean, I can't get into that minutia.
Yeah, and I think, too, when you're looking at that, the AMI, and I think it's a range. It's got to be between, I don't know if it's 50 to 70, but the average has to be 60, I think, is the way that it's structured.
So they can have some above and some below.
That's correct, yeah.
Can you get that back to us at some point after this?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I can get you just kind of the presentation that we did when the whole Colonial Circle was coming through.
Yeah, definitely was a range, you're right.
Anything else? I mean, so this is their presentation. Does the board have any questions about, you know, the request or the details of the request? I mean, I can certainly.
So I would just add the, and it's a huge financial factor, so it can't be not discussed. You know, I think everybody's aware, and the fight's over, and I didn't have a dog in the fight. But the cost of the building of the high school is still a factor today. If we can talk about everything else, that's got to be part of it too. That is a factor in what the taxpayers are paying, however it was budgeted, however it comes through. And there's been a lot said about what's happened to the schools, and I agree with it, about the schools getting their budget cut after that. And so, you know, if one begats the other, in part, right or wrong, if we're going to keep talking about what happened to the budget after, then you got to be able to talk about what happened when the school was built. And, you know, I said to a bunch of teachers that I played softball with at the time, and all that was going on, and the board was deliberating and voting on it. I still remember us being at a softball game and saying, man, as far as teachers go, this is going to hurt you. And I still think today it's affecting what we're able to pay the teachers. And so it's hard to not, when we're talking about how we compare, it's hard to not put such a big financial factor into part of the consideration. And I think it's going to, unfortunately, affect what teachers get paid for some time to come.
When do we get that thing built?
36,
I think.
I can't remember which person I was talking to not too long ago, but they were talking about the fact that they were going to have to build two new elementary schools, and that the cost of the elementary schools was something like $50 million a piece. Yeah, that's what they're facing. I know that, and not to hash it, but I know that at the time that the debate about the schools was happening and the cost of the high school, there's a study that's performed every year by a construction company that rates the average per square foot cost in the Southeast for building a high school. And at that time, we fell within that per square foot cost for the median in the Southeast. You know, a lot can be said whether they should have done it before the peak of the market or after the peak of the market or whatever the case may be, but the practical reality is, you know, previous boards decided that they didn't want to make a decision to, you know, buy a high school when maybe it was more affordable. Other boards came in and said, well, we're going to put it in this location, et cetera, et cetera. All those things change. It is a reality no matter what, and we'll face this reality maybe in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years when we're looking at building another building for the schools, that, you know, the cost of these buildings is very substantial and not cheap. And you know, that's just...
At some time after, I think it was a year I was on the board in 2011, and again, it's all already happened, it's behind us, but it's good discussion to be discussing how it's affecting us today. I was in a political fundraiser golf tournament in Powhatan, and there was three of us, and so they placed another person onto our team. And, you know, it's just the way you do it. You get a couple holes in, what do you do, so on and so on. And I think it's been long enough ago where I can say that we had this conversation, and the guy said, well, I'm a school architect. And was the lead person in designing this high school and consulting how much should be spent and so on. And to what you're saying about all the boards before it and economic factors and so on, he openly said to me, and I think his number was 88, I could be wrong, but it was 80 something, that we built 88 schools, and Chris, we got this one wrong, which was saying that they overbuilt the school. That is having an effect today. And it's got to be, I mean, that's from the mouth of the guy who said, let's do it like this, and had all the experience. And so, again, it's already happened, it's long behind us. Right. But the house you live in affects, you know, what you can spend on other stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was on the board at that time, and I got on the board advocating for a new high school. I was also on a committee looking at all the schools in the area, because we had 27 trips, of what we could add on to other schools. We came back to the Board of Supervisors with a $45 million high school. They turned it down. So the new high school that we have, if we had to just build that high school, it would have cost us $68 million. We had to put in the ball field, the stadium, and everything around it. Because you remember Louisa built a new high school. But they had the ball, they just put the new, because of the tornado, I mean, the earthquake.
Yeah.
But they had all the other stuff built. We put in an extra gym. We also built that school so that it could expand to 2,500 kids. So that meant that we put in a cafeteria that did not have 3 bays, it had 6. We put in a library, top and bottom, so that if we got more children, we could use that library. We have ends of the school that automatically we can build it on, because a lot of people do not want us to have 2 high schools. They want Fluco's to be Fluco. We don't want to be Fluco number 1 and Fluco number 2. So those were the kinds of things that we did in order to expand it so that, and it was a state-of-the-art school as well. Now, when we built the middle school, we cut it, the middle school. We didn't put in all the rooms trying to save money. 2 or 3 years later, what do? We have to build on to the middle school and still had trailers in the back. So I really think that we did a good thing by putting that high school and the quality of that high school, which will last for generations. I'll probably be gone. Remember, I always said, when you finish paying for the high school in 1937, I think I will be 99, I believe. And I say, I hope I'll be here when you do the last payment. But I don't think it's, when you go into that building and you see what it offers our students, I don't know anyone who would have any regrets to say, oh, we should have built it cheaper. Well, that's just my personal, and I hear what you're saying. I mean, I'm not arguing. I'm just giving you some extra information on the thought behind the type of building that we built. I think we were very smart, and it's going to pay off. I mean, it is paying off now. What's the enrollment? About 1,500?
I'll just say, as far as industry standards, the amount of square footage that was built based upon the growth we were having and we're going to have was, some would say, was overstated and overgrown. And I mean, you could have built 50% more onto it and it had been cheaper then than it would be today. But there's different factors that they look at with the economy and so on. But anyway, I don't think you should be proud about building.
2019, Harrisonburg, new high school to cost $87 million.
They had a $90,000 high
school. Golden will only give you bad news on that one. They're getting ready to build a second one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And they're building, they're going to have a split.
Right.
Oh, wow.
And you know, and as we look at Central was built in 1958.
I was just talking about
that. And we added the kindergarten there and we added the upstairs. That building is probably deteriorating right now, because we're talking about 30 bathrooms, right? And it's deteriorating. And so I may not be around, but in the Domino plan, there was a plan for an elementary school coming over at Pleasant Road. It's going to probably will be coming sooner than you think. Let's hope not.
Well, one of the things we talked about, I keep bringing up today, but when you have these guys come in and talk, they throw ideas at you. And they talk about historic tax credits. And I said, we still have 2 schools that were used during segregation. You know, one of them's our alternative school was the old high school. And he talked about historic tax credits when we're doing renovations and things of that nature. He said, they're difficult, but he said, with a building that old, it's definitely worth looking into.
Yeah.
Well, then he also said it's got to be privately owned anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the private sector, my experience of that is that it's not a cheaper model, because you got to go back to historic. Mm-hmm.
And you got to keep the historic. Trying to look at different things, so we look at all of our avenues. Yeah. We don't just...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm done.
I was just going to say, regardless, I can tell you that aside from putting $200,000 a year in MRR funds, the county's not saving money for the next school that it's going to build. So we're going to face debt financing for that as well, too. And second, the cost was the cost. But should we be punishing kids just because the cost was the cost? And that's, I think, really the...
Come on, only point is it's going to come down to how much the taxpayers give. And
So to answer your concern on that, what are we doing today to not fall into that same situation again?
Well, again, not all of it was that. Some of it was an overbuild. So part of it, to your point, is to learn from, part of what we're doing is trying to learn from what we've done and do it different in the future. But that in itself is not affecting today's budget. But, you know, what we do in the future, well, it could be. So you're saying put more money into the kitty.
The complaint was that we were spending, you know, we took on this huge debt, which, I mean, if you look at our debt structure, it is 65% of it or something like that. So, you know, yes, it was enormous. And at the point that the debt was taken on, I think it took the budget from $25 million in debt to $95, $100 million, something like that neighborhood. So, yeah, I mean, it was an enormous increase. But if you look at the cost of building, unless you're saving money and putting it away, that is what you're going to spend down the road. And to Mr. Sheridan's point, you know, Harrisonburg got it wrong, and now they're building a second high school. So do they save money? You know, it is the cost of retrofitting. That
of course.
Was another number that came up, was the cost of retrofitting a school. It was like double the cost of the square foot after the fact. So you do want to get it right and plan a little bit in the future as well.
We don't have history with that Harrisonburg school and the school system, though. You know, I mean, we do know sitting around this table more than we know.
Sure. No. And that was just a number. There's another one.
When you go back and start talking about mistakes that were made, things of that nature, I mean, we were third fastest growing county in the state of Virginia.
Yeah.
And we didn't realize that once Lake Monticello filled up, we're going to stop growing. And Lake Monticello filled up, and we were still planning on being projected growth as the third fastest growing county in the state. And we just don't have enough. We don't have enough infrastructure to be that.
So I'd say we should talk about it. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
It's okay.
I'd say we should, you and I should talk about that offline. And the reason, in part, I never brought it up was, and it's a good conversation, was the only point I was, and I understand justifying, the only point I was making was, is that in the perception of some, that's affecting the tax rate the taxpayer pays today.
Well, it absolutely does. We know that
so
we
it's
pay.
Affecting our ability. Potentially is affecting our ability to give money in other ways to the school system.
Because we know we got to pay, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. We know we're going to pay whatever we set the tax rate at, 26 or 27 cent. Well, 84.5 is the highest we can go. 26 or 27 cent, we don't use for everyday basis. That's just to pay our debt.
Well, I mean, if you think about...
It's gotten less now because the number's gone up. Whatever our total debt is, because we get 370.
What was originally, the total debt originally?
Well, it fluctuated because we're back over 100 million now, I think, because of the Zions Crossroads water line.
Yeah, I know, but when we built the high school, what was the cost to how much we bought?
I don't know if I've ever heard an exact number on that one.
Yeah, we did some.
I thought it was 90-something.
No, I think it's 79 million.
It's interesting. It depends on who's telling you. And I've never known exactly what the number is.
You know, honestly, I remember looking at this back in, I want to say 2012, 2013, and I'll have to pull it up because we did something, and I just can't recall because there were so many.
If I remember correctly, we were doing a thing where up until 2013, we were only paying the interest. We were not paying on the debt.
Where we refinanced, too.
Well, that's when we refinanced to start paying down the principal, I think.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. Right. I think we were doing something, the guy today talked about it, that you can pay only in interest.
Mm-hmm. Interest
interest only.
Interest only. And I think that's what was going on, so that might give you a number. I don't know. I mean, I've been out too much before.
I heard another board member asking about this, and I think over time I've figured it out decently well, but can you all elaborate for non-governmental school people? Can you just tell us about STEP and bands? Can you explain that, to how that works and what the thinking is?
Well, STEPs, so a STEP scale obviously is defined 35 years, 30 years, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And theoretically, if you're financially able to sustain it, each person, each step would correlate to your years of experience. So if you have 7 years of experience, you come in. If there's a step zero, like there is for most of us in public schools, then you come in on step six and advance up a year for the next year and the next year and the next year.
You knew what your raise was going to be.
As long as you knew what your step advancement
was. Yeah, step was going to be.
And then, you know, if there was a percent raise given, then the decision could be to give the percent raise to the steps plus advance people up, or give a step or the percent, whichever's higher. There's different ways to do that. But theoretically, that's why it's built, so that you have a structure that advances people up.
And you're kind of forced into that model with teachers, because everybody has steps and scales for teachers. And so that's what...
It's kind of industry norm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're not using that model, then you're out of the norm, and so you're kind of forced into that with your teaching population.
But part of the difficulty with steps versus scales is that obviously we have scales for teachers, and in other roles, we don't. We have bands, and so those bands ultimately end up receiving what is the like average of whatever we provide to teachers in terms of percentiles. But part of the difficulty here, and it's kind of perverse in a lot of ways, is that when boards sit down to propose their budgets, I'm pointing at you because you've been on previous boards, there's always the question, and because you're thoughtful in analysis, the questions are, you know, do we give a step and COLA? Do we just give a step? Or do we do step or blank percent, whichever is higher? And
or,
so,
or would you say like percent?
Do we give like X percent or a step, whichever is higher? And so you end up with this, is it and or is it whichever is higher? And what I've seen over the some odd years is that in a lot of cases we're doing, you know, 5% or your step. And so that means that like all the staff that are on scales get the 5%. The teachers will get at least 5, but in a lot of cases it can be 7.5 or 10 based on where they are in the step. And so that actually leads to really inequities between teachers and non-teachers. And it's honestly, in my personal James Kelly opinion, how we end up in these positions where we remain relatively or better comparatively to other divisions on teachers, but everything else gets left behind.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Gretz had a good example for me the other day. You indicated that you had met a superintendent who had what the starting teacher salary was and ratios for every job function, and everything was based on this one like master spreadsheet where, you know, a custodian is 50% whatever the baseline teacher pay is, and everything was like remarkably predictable and formulaic. And that's not what happens in a division when we have scales and steps, and then we have disparate boards year over year making the decision between and or some kind of minimum threshold. And so it becomes disparate and unfair and in my word, inequitable for staff.
One of the reasons we did pay bands was because of the, it gave us flexibility when we brought in people with different kinds of experience. And probably the most of our pay bands have 3-4 people on them. So you have very few people in those categories. But like maintenance workers is probably my best example, because you might hire a maintenance worker that has all of these certifications in electricity or HVAC, and you want to pay them more than you might want to pay a maintenance worker that has basic carpentry skills. And so we, by having a band, we can fluctuate that depending on those certifications and levels of experience that that person brings in. And so those look different. We do this a similar thing with nurses. We look at, is this person an LPN? Is this person an RN? what experiences do they have, and then we can fluctuate on that scale. So you're not just locked into, you have 3 years of experience, that's where you are no matter what. So it just kind of helps in that way.
Correct.
Thank you.
I think that's why it's difficult for us to understand, because we always try to give everybody the same amount.
Right.
So we don't understand, well, you can give this person 2% and this person 12. That doesn't make sense.
Right, and there have been times where our boards wanted to do a flat dollar amount. They might have wanted mm-hmm. to say, we'll give everybody $1,000.
Right.
And true, that does give some people a higher percentage, but what ends up coming to us from the state is almost always percentages. It's not flat dollar amounts, and mm-hmm. so you're kind of forced into doing percentages versus dollar amounts.
And what happened in the down years is they put the wonderful language of a 2% average. Mm-hmm. Which allowed us to do something we should have done to help those that are the lower paid. But if you were in the middle, like I was, or near the end, you know, I got like a 0.1% raise, 0.2% raise. That was my raise, because it cost more for me to get it. But anyway, and going back to your steps, and I will add this in, because this is way before your time, Dr. Kelly. Dr. Gretz. But, they put in huge steps, and this is what Mr. Weaver used to always get uptight about. Now it's in 5 years and 15 years. They put them there to help us compete with Albemarle, Louisa, Gucci.
But it's also to keep the teachers.
That's what I'm saying, to compete, to keep.
Yeah.
Because you came in and you had to teach 3 years to get your tenure. And then if you see that big $5,000 jump or $4,000 jump 2 years from now, when every other raise has been $500, you'll stay for two more years. And then you look to year 15, and if you got to year 15, it was a $7,000 jump, if I remember correctly. It was huge at 15. But I know a lot of the people that were getting ready to take that step and everything went down,
yes.
And all of a sudden, that step just kept staying a year in front of them because everything just stayed stagnant,
right.
If that makes any sense at all.
That.
So that's...
Thank you.
Some of the issues with the steps. I'm not trying to steal y'all's thunder, but that's just lived through it. So.
And I certainly understand as an employer, it's hard to figure out what the right formula is. We've got it wrong more than once.
The boards ask us over time to kind of smooth that out, which we've been able to do in a lot of cases. But we've never wanted to operate on a model where we were going to cut your pay to make the scale look different.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, and the scales look wildly different since even I came into office 3.5 years ago, or Ms. Johnson 8 years ago, and I think Ms. Johnson's actually one of the reasons that's the case is because we've had these excessive pay bumps, and they happen later in your career, and every time we talk budget, whether in a boardroom or one-on-one, it's about moving more of that money up front because so much of it is sort of like gamified at the end for the sake of VRS and other things. But also because our budget becomes unpredictable when you have a cohort of people that go from year 14 to 15 and it's $7,500 increase with that one of those.
Well, that would put the biggest reason for that is so that you didn't lose that teacher that was a 10-year teacher to Albemarle or somewhere else. We hung that I hate to use the analogy way, but you hung a carrot out in front of them to get them to stay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because then, hey, here's what you're going to get if you'll stick with us and be faithful till you're 15. That's what it was. So, anyway.
Was it successful?
At the beginning time, yes.
Worked on me. Yeah, I remember the people who were going to that 15th step and it was cut out. Oh my goodness.
I would argue that the thing that we've replaced it with is more of their income up front by paying more competitively in the early years. We don't need to dangle, like, come with us and in 15 years you'll get a pay bump that's a promise, not a guarantee. Instead, we're saying, hey, come here and we're going to pay you competitively, and we're going to pay you competitively through your lifetime without gamification and without holding a carrot 15 years down the road.
Well, sad.
Except the gamification part.
He used it twice.
Well, that's his expertise.
I think about it a lot. Because functionally, it's just behavioral economics. It's like, what do you need to do to keep people around? But like, when that's the power structure, are you really being a partner? Are you a fluco if if you need to like bait and switch on folks. And I don't think so.
So you're saying you want to make sure you don't swipe left or right? Yeah.
That is beyond me, my friend.
All right. So we need
So is there anything in, I'm not sure if you're what the board wants to look at from the school's budget piece at this point. I mean, I know there's...
Anybody have any more questions for that school?
We'll go back to where you had options, right here. Yeah.
Which?
Like option.
Okay. Well, was this the one?
It doesn't matter, right?
Because this was option. Oh, do you have, is there one chart with all the options?
Yeah. I think some of those.
Here, I think that's it right there. That's
is that specific to the
teachers
methodology as it relates to pay? Or? Oh, okay, I see. That's fine. Yep.
This shows the thought behind how each option is structured. There is a slide that exists, and I can't remember if it's here, and if not, I have it, that shows those. What those teacher scales look like.
I see 2.475. Where did 2.6 come from, Dr. Gretsch?
That does not include state revenue. Is that what you're asking?
That isn't the state share of compensation.
No, that's a question cost. I asked Dr. Gretsch this morning. Yeah. You know, it's strange how stuff works. I go fill the bus up. One car is waiting in line. It's Dr. Gretsch. But anyway, because I asked this morning. Something that we've had to do on our side. The state is saying 7%. Now, we won't know until after our budget is done whether or not they're doing 7%. So we had to include $121,000.
Well, the cost is $236 to go from the 5% to the 7%. That's the cost of it. But we get about $60,000 offset of that. So the cost was $240,000. The offset is $60,000.
So we have an additional $60,000 or something of that nature.
Yes, we budgeted $60,000.
And that was one question I asked Dr. Gretsch. If with the extra 2%, do y'all have that where we're paying the whole thing?
So
or does that have the state factored into it?
Can you go to that summary?
And you can't assume they're going to pay it.
Right.
Am I going?
The budget summary towards the end.
Oh, yeah. And this, that one.
That. That shows the state share. I can't see from here, but.
It's 1.496 is the state share.
Yeah. I can't see it, but it's over there.
It's over there, but I can't see it.
Far top right under the blue.
Oh, 130. Oh.
That's my estimate of
the 2 million.
That's the estimate if it's a 7%.
We won't know what the state share is until we get a template. Obviously, but this is our best estimate using what we know what the 5 is.
Yeah,
but the 2 million is included in this budget, assuming a 7%.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But this is the low version, the low state funding version. Worst case scenario.
That's a projection of the 7% there, but but the rest of it is that what the governor and House had, not what the Senate had.
And I think the other thing maybe to point out, I'm sorry, I can't.
Well, if you need, come up here, Dr. Gretsch. If you need, come up here.
Is the reduced state funding on there?
Yeah.
Okay, so the reduction in state funding, it should be about $300,000.
No, it ended up being less than that.
Because it's matriculated. Yeah. Okay. So the skinny budget that just came out holds us harmless for this year. There's been no discussion of what they're going to do with that next year, but they could.
Yeah, he talked about that today. He said that could disappear. That's what Jeremy was talking about.
So a point of clarification, the previous thing that we're looking at, that was the teacher scale, option A, option B, et cetera, was the total cost, but that was only one of our scales. Like we had the similar slide for pay bands and for pay scales. And so there's three different components or three different ways that we pay people that are all baked in. And those were looking at the total costs. And did not include or did not back out the state piece of the funding itself.
And Eric, if you go back, maybe that right there.
Yep.
So the top one is the teacher scale adjustment. You can see the cost on the right. The other scales cost on the right and the pay bands. So that's where that total comes from. And again, that does not include state revenue to support those.
So all this right here.
Total cost.
Is the 3.79 yes. plus the 300,000, or is that just the.
Plus it.
Okay.
Yeah, the 300,000 is the retention bonus that the governor included.
It was really in one version.
Beyond the 7%.
It was in the House, right?
Yeah.
It's in the House version, not the Senate. That may or may not be in what we ultimately.
So are you doing a minimum of 7% or a minimum of 8%?
Minimum of 7.
Well,
the salary is a minimum of 7.
The salary is 7, but there's a 1% bonus.
Is 1, and yes. those are separate in those scenarios.
Yeah. The retention bonus is written, the language says that if you're employed in Fluvanna this year, fiscal 23, and you come back to Fluvanna next year, that you will get a one-time 1% bonus in September.
I thought it was going to be 1% for every year you taught.
I'm retiring. At least 3 more years.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Senate version does not include any of those bonuses, the performance bonus that the governor also included, performance bonus, but the Senate lifts the support cap. Which is why it's $1 million different.
What does that mean? It lifts the support cap.
SOQs. What you're saying?
So the standards of quality, the SOQs, are written in state code now, and that's the language that says if you have this many kids, you have to have this many English teachers, this many kindergarten teachers, this many. So in that document, there are support positions, about 18 or 19 of them. That's the language in the code. Guidance counselors, psychologists, instructional assistants, custodians, secretaries, stuff like that. So in 2010, the General Assembly adopted, their words, a one-time emergency Band-Aid fix to balance the budget that year. And so what they said is the SOQs are requiring these support positions at this ratio, and they lowered the ratio and said we're only going to pay for this. They put a cap on it. And the one-time emergency fix has been in place ever since.
They've never gone back in and fixed it.
So the Senate is proposing to lift that cap and go back to the original funding structure, which would frankly be a game changer for any small rural place, okay. If not everybody.
Everybody.
That cap is why we have 80-something, our high 70s instructional assistants, and we only get state funding for 3. It's the reason why our budget had to get crunched and why we had to deal with RIFs in that time period, because they just weren't paying for the positions that we needed. And it's one of the reasons that we don't have a lot of positions that we should have in place in order to give the students the services that they need in-house.
So looking forward to future budget years, the removal of that cap would be very beneficial.
It would be incredible.
Yeah.
It was over a $900,000 loss in state revenue in Fluvanna that first year alone. Uh-huh. It's estimated over $9 million over the.
My fear is though, I want to see a template first, because I don't want to see that they took the money from someone else to change the cap. Right.
Her title is professional skeptic.
That was 2010.
She's
always
2010. Okay. In the words of my colleague Billy Kiger, that's on the board with me, he's from Rockingham, and his wife's the one that ran the teachers department at JMU. Chair keeps sinking.
You
know, I'm
getting
shorter. I'm sorry. But they always go, we got a $3 million or $3 billion surplus. And he goes, nope, you don't have a surplus until you pay your bills. And until you get rid of that, you're not paying your bills. And trust me, that gentleman today, that's what he was told. So, and he's one of the ones that's in charge of it. I don't know if it fell on deaf ears. But he stayed there the whole time and listened.
So do we know what the school board needs from the county? Do we have to wait until the state and the federal government?
We can't.
By the time we adopt the budget, we're probably not going to know.
So what if we don't have enough money?
Well, I don't want to speak for the schools. I think what the schools are saying is they are putting the worst case funding scenario in here for them to implement what they're trying to implement. If the state comes out with a budget that is more advantageous, there may be more funding coming to the county, which would mean then that would reduce what the county actually has to pay in for fiscal year 24. So, I mean, what we're doing is because one, we just don't know by the time that the board sets a tax rate. So, I don't want to say it this way, but I'm just going to say it this way. We may have to artificially have the tax rate higher because we don't know what the state's going to do. The state could come back and say, well, look, you know, we're going to give you extra $1 million, when if we knew that up front, well, then we could have just lowered the tax rate by 3 cents. But
so, did we figure that in with when we set the rate?
Yes. Well, yeah.
Because we can't raise that.
Correct. I mean, right now the board did not put 2 points again, 2.6
plus 2.3 available for that.
Yeah, we didn't put 2.6, and the board put 2 point. I can go back.
It's 2.26, 2.265 or something of that nature.
Yeah,
2.674.
Well, that's
the last one. Oh, no, that's the ask. Not done. Yeah, apologies.
Yeah. Well, you're out. I can tell
and
you.
What you when you appropriate. Appropriate a flat dollar amount
2.2
to us, and so we can't go over that dollar amount unless we come back to you. So it's not that if we were to get more state money, it's not that we go, oh, yummy, we get some more money. It's we have to come back and say, this is what we're getting now. And so it is a little bit of a, as your predecessor would say, pinky promise.
Assurances above and beyond.
But, I mean, we can't go above what you appropriate to us anyway.
And this, you know, at least Mr. Kelly, not speaking for the entire school board, has said that whatever the surplus is, that's going to come back to the county at that point.
Right, but there's nothing we can do to adjust the tax rate at that point.
No.
No, and at the end of the day, all that would do is if the board, let's say, the board adopted the budget the way it is right now, state comes back and the school's, state funding happens to be better, well, then really what that's going to do is just going to put that money back in the fund balance. Because, again, the schools could come back and say, well, we want to request our budget increased by $1 million, but I think you've heard by some of the board members saying that maybe that would not be the case.
Do y'all know of a case when the, let's say that was to happen, and we took the money and we put it in the fund balance. Do y'all know of a case when the next year you came back and took it out of fund balance and put it towards the tax rate?
Yeah. Towards the tax rate?
We have taken money out of the fund balance to make up the budget.
Correct. We've taken money out to supplement the budget right. When there were times, but not a lot.
Not a lot. Since I've been on the board, it has happened.
We've done it once or twice.
It's been, I can say in my over 10 years of having been involved with these budgets, I can't think of a time where it's probably been over. I mean, again, the last... The last 2 years, the board put in money to offset the debt service payments to take out that big bolus of debt. And so that was being paid with fund balance until the big debt service payment comes off. But besides that, I would bet it was probably not more than $200,000.
The point is there's no precedence for, I mean, once that taxpayer money is gone, no matter where it goes, that money is going from the taxpayer.
Well, but the only thing it could happen is if the state raises their share, let's say $1 million. Well, that will be $1 million the following year, as long as they keep it the same, that we can adjust our tax rate, if that makes sense. There'll be $1 million that would have been there, but it wasn't there until, every commissioner of revenue and every treasurer would have had a stroke today. Because the guy that stood up and gave that speech, he's like, well, y'all's budget doesn't have to be done until June 30th. He literally said that today. And I guess by state mandate, we can wait until June 30th. But if commissioner is listening right now, somebody might need to take the AED down there. I mean, it just, we can't wait that long. I mean, but he's like, oh, yeah, y'all can just wait.
Yeah, but, I mean, to answer your question, though, we generally have not balanced the budget with fund balance because generally the you know, the budget is kind of a reoccurring thing, and, right. and using one-time dollars to balance it is, in my opinion, probably not the best thing to do on a continual basis. Now, you have some localities, again, we've had this conversation, and I had a conversation with a neighbor that, again, they were getting lots of heat on their tax rate. Again, their tax rate's the same, but they had a 13% increase in their value. In their values, yeah. and
people are finally becoming wise mm-hmm. to what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, so Fluvanna, we have generally our tax rate has ebbed and flowed based upon kind of what were the requirements and based upon what were the reassessments.
Is that the reason that does that?
I would say
a lot more.
I would say, we can pull up one of those charts.
Yeah,
I think
I'm looking.
Oh yeah, you have it right there.
I'm looking at it. We're the only county that has adjusted its tax rate
down,
other than Nelson County, which did in 23. That's the only one. Almost all the other ones stayed flat or increased. Right? So they didn't adjust down; they just stayed flat and increased. And that, and a lot of these counties reassess on a 2-year cycle. We do it on 2 for a full year,
yeah.
and then we do the the full assessment in 4 years, which tends to be the bigger one.
Every two years,
yeah. But we do an administrative assessment, and then we do a full assessment.
And here's where the big part happens. Only when you do a full assessment do you get your full utility tax, or close to your full tax from your utility.
Yeah.
When you don't reassess every year, their rate goes down, what they pay, and when you talk about theirs going down, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, Fluvanna's from its peak tax rate has gone down 10 cents. And we were 1 cent from the top at one point, and now we're 9 cents from the top. Yeah. So.
I'll just tell you, the big counties that I keep bringing back up, it was almost like a shell game. I mean, one county that was leading it was like, yeah, we're going to give them a 1 cent tax decrease this year, maybe. I said, well, what was your equalized rate? And the equalized rate was 11 cents below what the tax rate was.
I think two years ago, Charlottesville had a 30% increase in property values. They didn't lower their tax rate.
We were the only ones last year. When we go up on personal property, we were the only ones who adjusted the personal property rate because we knew it was going to be a huge influx to help mitigate the financial burden on our citizens. Now, the average person has no idea what I just said.
By the way, is that really true that we are the only one? I've heard it said several times, but I haven't seen it on the chart. Is there a chart that says on personal property what everybody, like, what the...
Personal property, I think it's on that chart.
So the year before and then last year.
It's on the back side of
personal property.
No, is it 23 on that? Fiscal year 23, property. I think we do.
Yeah, 23 is on there.
I think we're the only ones that adjust it.
Now, I will say, for instance, it's one of the counties, I think it may have been Greene County.
Okay, I thought Nelson did something.
Greene or Nelson maybe did some type of rebate from personal property taxes. I remember it's one of the counties of that size. I just don't remember which one.
Albemarle went 428 to 342.
Oh, so Albemarle did more there?
I
apologize to Albemarle.
Yeah.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is when you don't change, when they're staying flat, they bake those numbers into the next budget already, right?
Yeah.
You know, so they had that 30% increase in Charlottesville. That's already baked into the next budget. They get the next assessment, gets baked in.
Yeah.
When we adjust it, we don't bake that in at all. And so we end up fluctuating our tax rate probably more than we should because we're, I'm just saying in comparison to the rest of the counties, we're not doing what they're doing, and so we end up fluctuating more than the other counties do because we don't have those baked-in rates that they're able to then take advantage of in the future. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's arguments on both sides.
I'm just pointing out that is what is in line in when you look at this is the impact of that base rate on a cumulative basis.
Yeah.
That's what you don't see in this chart, but that it, that's a really significant difference there.
Well, right? If and I hate to bring back up, but let's say we end up at 81, just throwing out 81 or 83, whatever. Take 26 cents off of that. Mm-hmm. And then you're at 57. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we could easily set our tax rate at 60 if we didn't have to pay for 26 cents to debt service.
Sure.
That's
sure.
I think that's the biggest reason we do that.
Right.
Whereas instead of just saying, okay, we're going to leave it at 9.
Right.
Right. And have $4 million left over at the end of each year.
Well, or who knows? I mean, I don't know what they're doing with their budgets as to whether they're, you know, allocating more money towards it. I mean, I know that Louisa had a huge general fund, like $60 million at one point or something like that, mm-hmm. an enormous general fund. Mm-hmm. So I think some of those take that, they put in their general fund.
Well, I think they cash funded the water fund when they put it in.
Yeah.
Well, I will say some look at, I think I look at Louisa, not pick on Louisa, I think they do at times balance their budget with their general fund just because they get surplus, yeah.
Right, but yeah, that would be an interesting thing to see is what is the general fund for most of the surrounding counties in terms of, you know,
yeah.
a relationship. I mean, ours is above and beyond the 12%, but does that mean that, you know, other counties are in essence saying, well, we're going to put 30% down on the new high school because it's in our general fund because they took advantage of those things. So that's, you know, just something we haven't ever talked about, I don't think.
I can tell you how Goochin paid for theirs. I lived there at that time. Uh-huh. They did a spike for 3 years. And I can't remember what the spike was. It's like 10-15% cents. They went up and boom, boom, boom.
Paid it off. And that
did it come back down?
Huh?
Did it come back down?
Yes, ma'am.
So right now, again, in the budget itself, we are at we are currently at 84.5. We're at a 415 personal property, 290 personal property business, 290 personal property public utilities, and then $1.90. In this budget, it's got a 7% for county staff. It's got the, well, I can't say from the schools what the 2.2 would do to the school's budget based upon the 2.6 request. But that's kind of where things are. You know, I think we have a pretty healthy CIP that's in here right now. I mean, I don't think it's anemic, but I don't think it's bigger than it needs to be. And I think there's lots of things being funded. So we have a work session. Well, one, the discussion today was, do we need a work session next Wednesday? If not, we've got a meeting on April 5th. We have a regular meeting at 5, and then we have a work session planned for 7. We would have to have everything nailed down and the budget pretty much, you know, ready to go by that point. So any further, you know, things that the board wants to dig into as far as the budget goes or school budget?
I don't know that I would say we're anticipating revenue changes, but
yeah.
Would you be surprised if there were some? Is that?
I am certain we will probably get some additional value updates from the commissioner's office.
I don't know how much it will be.
No, I'm just asking.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we'll get some.
Did we reach consensus on the health?
Yeah.
And that was the last one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. The board voted to go with the option 5. Five. Yep. So yeah, I mean that's.
So what is the? I mean, we've got this in place, but I'd just like to hear from the schools. What's the impact of a $2 million budget versus a $2.2 million budget versus the 2.6 that you've got? What's the school board going
to
do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fabulous question. I haven't had a chance to speak to the other board members about where in the budget ultimately we would offset. Obviously, anything that comes under the 2.67, which you're not prepared to do, will impact what we can do salary-wise. So I have to imagine that the blunt answer is triage, meaning let's find the roles and positions that we think we can provide relief to and model from there. I want to clarify also that what I indicated before per your question is that, you know, if you all fund us 2-3 and then we get an extra $1 million from the from the state, we can't spend any of that without your permission. I will advocate in the event that that money comes back in and they're like, oh, here's an extra $5 million. I would be prepared, if two other board members are, to advocate up to the 2.674, but no higher to this board. So I want to be very clear about my intent. If the million comes in, and there are things that we have to cut in order to fit to whatever you guys are prepared to provide to the schools, I will advocate up to that budget, but no higher as an individual in front of you. It doesn't matter if they give us $5 or $10 million. I would come back and advocate up to that 2.674. That said, finding, you know, it's going to be really difficult to find places in this budget to cut, especially in the interest of fixing some of these pay structures. So I think that we're going to have a really hard job ahead of us, regardless of the outcome here, to find those places. You know, it would be lovely if somehow, the state decided to pick up more of the literacy curriculum and other pieces there, but that functionally is additional state funding that we would need to ask for anyway, above and beyond whatever you set. So I'm hopeful that there are enough offsets in the future here to try to make us whole up to 2.7 with additional state funding, but I think it's going to be a contentious discussion and a difficult one to find places to model this back down. Because I think that in a world of fixed and malleable costs, the only things that are malleable are the robust proposal to fix salaries. And so, you know, if there's a $500,000 differential or a $400,000 differential, that comes off our capacity to make those changes.
So we're talking about a penny?
May I add, Moselle, only because I've already addressed this with you all. I disagree with Dr. Kelly, and I will try to support the salary changes. So we'll make, if I have my way, we'll make substantial cuts in other areas.
Or not cut teachers. Not cut staff.
Not cut the salary changes.
Right.
So those are my priority. Right.
So where else can you go?
Well, I can't say because I can't speak for the whole board. I have some proposals, and I'm sorry, I'm not willing to share.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't necessarily say not make staff cuts. You said not make cuts to the increases.
I'm talking salary. I support the salaries. The salary changes.
So I think you're saying it on both sides. So.
Right.
But without cutting
people. Without cutting people.
Okay.
I don't consider that a malleable part of the budget.
There's not a lot that would be consensus on malleability or things that, and Ms. Johnson and I obviously have a good working relationship, but we come from different perspectives, and I expect us to respectfully argue throughout the duration of this budget process in order to find what makes sense and what is palatable to
the county. It's called democracy.
So oh yeah, 100%.
If we fully fund it,
I just can't predict what those things are, to be honest.
What would it be?
What's that?
I'm sorry.
If we fully funded the school, what would the tax rate be?
Well, yeah, you'd have to add in at least another penny.
Well, we have to take that out.
Well, you know what you do? It would probably be a penny because remember we put in. Well, I mean, at this point, we can't necessarily increase the budget at this point. The board advertised. We're going to have to cut something.
Yeah, we'd have to cut.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to cut. I mean, remember, you just to equal out the budget, we've got that 62,000 kind of, you know, excess that was there.
Just for fun, do me a favor. Mm-hmm. Leave, put it at the very top. Let's pretend we were doing what all the other counties do. And put it at the very top, our current tax rate.
Okay.
87.
Yeah, so I mean, from what the schools requested, there we're short by what you'd say, 467. Mm-hmm. We're 467,000 short. I think that's what the number is. Or
I may be foolish or optimistic, but my dream here is that you all do what you can provide, and obviously you have other other principles and other considerations, but that we get lucky with the state and that we're able to come back and advocate for that bottom number in the event that there's new revenue, with fully acknowledging that there's no guarantees on that.
Seems like there'll be a compromise of some sort, so one more hope.
Well, so any other discussion?
I've discussed enough for today.
Well, here's a question I've got, and I asked this a minute ago. You said the state this year is going to pay, they're only paying $700,000. What is it, $700,000 and Dr. Gretz? How much is the state supposed to be giving to y'all? I think y'all had $700,000 and something.
For what?
Extra additional money.
Total? Or towards?
Like I said, I apologize for missing part of it. I had a fire call.
So right now in the budget, we're at what they gave us is $2.28.3 million. And again, currently,
yeah, how much of that is that like governor's school added into that and
yes.
stuff like that?
Yes.
So that comes off. How much is that? Because we're the pass-through agent for the governor's school.
I can't tell you that off the top of my head.
Is it a million, 2 million, or?
It's like 1.4, 1.5.
So, okay. I'm just trying to get what we're paying if we were to do the 2 million or the two. You know, right now it looks to me like we're at 44%. But if you take that 1.4 million off, now we're at 48% or something like that, that we're paying.
The 40%.
We've had that discussion. Yeah. In the state, the counties and the cities exceed it by $4 billion, I believe,
yeah.
total.
We put the worst case scenario for health insurance as well.
Exactly. And ours, knock on wood, even spiked my scooter ability, came back less. Sorry, I figured somebody needed to laugh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think this is a good budget myself. I'd be proud of this budget. I think it's a huge step forward for the schools. I think we did a good job with CIP. If we get money back, that's fine because we used some extra CIP money. We've got CIP stuff that's coming up, $11 million projected for next year. That there's no way we're going to touch that, so we're going to end up pushing $5 million back down the road as well, too. We have moved from having the second highest tax rate to now the third highest tax rate, and that's not counting what other people are going to do. And then I don't know if you got a chance to look at that document that I sent you, but you know, again, the overall tax burden in relationship to other counties is better than many counties. This is a good budget, and when we look at what our counterparts are doing in other counties, I don't think they're doing as good of a job as going over the budget as we are.
I have a question, and this has nothing to do with tonight. I pushed for it, and we put a referendum, and it got voted down for meals tax. How long ago was that?
We can't bring it back until November of 2024.
And here's the bad part, Ms. Booker. Uh-huh. And this is where I think we're absolutely getting taken by in the woodshed. If we'd have waited a year, we could have done it on our own without a referendum.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But because we put it before a referendum, we can't do it now. We have to wait.
5 years.
And I bought a blizzard day on my way home from Richmond in Louisa and paid 50 cents in meals tax.
But we're not a tourism county. The mass of that money is going to be paid by the citizens anyway. So why not just increase?
I'm just talking about. I'm just talking about as another tool in our toolbox.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, going back for localities, and I could pull something up if the board wants to see it. I mean, we certainly have less taxes in place than other localities have. Again. Not that we've got a ton of lodging, but we don't have a lodging tax. We don't have a meals tax. We don't have any type of, and I'm not proposing this, any type of business, you know, B-pole or anything like this.
That might be something that makes us.
You need to pull that chart up sometime.
That might be something that
makes us. I don't think Mr. Fairchild's seen that, but that was.
Yeah, that's a good.
That's a good document.
It shows all the different tax.
Are you talking about the real robust one
in each county?
Yeah.
Except us.
That one that needs to be updated.
That needs to be updated. But basically, the point being is, of the surrounding counties,
we have the least levers. You look at different tax bases to pull from. So therefore, when you look at our tax rate for real estate in relationship to the other counties, they have more tools to keep their tax rate, even though they're not doing it. You know,
well, yeah. I mean,
if we had those tools.
And you're right, we're not a huge tourism place, but instead of taking it all in personal property or real estate, we could transfer this to a meals tax per se, and then people who do happen to come through, driving up Route 15 or driving down 53 to come visiting or going to play soccer tournaments or coming to do a bike race, if they eat at one of our places at the lake or at EW's, then we have a chance for, like, I hate to say it this way, but today I helped Louisa pay their tax bill.
I think when it would have so little impact, again, this is for a different time. I think transparency in our couple taxes is good for the taxpayer to understand what they're paying. And when I was on the board in 2011, the county administrator at the time, we're having a chamber event, and he was advocating for BPOL. And I said, but well, why would we institute a BPOL tax? He said, because we can. You know, it's a lot of taxes are there and in place because we have the ability and power to do so. So if there's good reason to, you know, if we have changes in Fluvanna where we have good reasons to institute those, but it's simple the way it is and easy for, you know, as we've all understand, the average taxpayer isn't watching this board meeting. They're not going to watch a board meeting 4 months from now. They're feeding their children and being sure they did homework and getting to bed and doing it again tomorrow. And a simple way to understand how much they're paying in taxes, I think, is good for.
And the one thing that really gets me each year, Chris, is they'll get in the paper and they'll say, Fluvanna raises the taxes 6%, and we drop the rate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and they'll go, God, I don't know. Forgive me, Fitzgerald.
Right.
But they'll go, Louisa keeps tax rate the same. Mm-hmm. No, they didn't. They raised the tax rate 13%.
Yeah. Right.
They just kept the same number.
Yeah.
You know, the explanations in the media are not very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of them don't realize how much we battle with how to make this as feasible for everybody as we can, and how equitable we try to make it.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll say, oh, we're chasing a rate. Well, we're trying to be as good to all the citizens of our county as we can be.
Mm-hmm. And I think this isn't the first conversation we've had. I think if you go back to 1997, there was an extensive study about BPOL tax, capital, whatever taxes, and that report should be somewhere in your office. I used to have a copy. That was when Mel was on the board. Jerome, you need to pull that. And they were to vote on it, and they lost it by one vote. In 1997, we could have had those kind of taxes in place, and they thought they had the vote.
But wouldn't it have just lowered what we had to pay in real estate and personal property? It had just been. I mean, if you get $100,000 a year in salary, you get $95,000 a year in salary and $5,000 in bonus. At the end of the day, there's not but so much difference in how much money you're getting at the end of the year, and it's there's strategies, but I don't know that back in the late 90s it would have affected how much money the government had to operate
it. I have no idea. I'm just saying.
I think it's all relevant. I mean, it's all relevant. I mean, you can argue, oh, you know, the number of business we have, we shouldn't do a BPOL tax. Mm-hmm. But the minute we have a, you know, $50 million business, you might say,
Look at all the money we lost.
The minute you have a Wawa that is doing $1 million in meals tax, and that's $80,000, you might say,
And that's my point when I said we're not a tourism county when it comes to meals tax.
Right.
I'm just not sure it's relevant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at some point,
Here's where it would have been relevant.
Yeah, the high school.
I was going to say, I don't know what a BPOL tax would be. Well, let's say it was 4%.
Right.
4% of $80 million?
Yeah. That's cool.
Someone else got that tax.
Mm-hmm. And whoever the construction company, wherever they're based.
Right, they paid.
If they had a beep hole, mm-hmm. they had to pay it to them. Now, one of the things I've heard about it, because I'm against adding new taxes, but if you could set a limit of somewhere of, okay, anything over $1 million, pay beep hole tax on for construction. But I mean for construction projects or something like that. And that's something where we need to, we can look at that over the next 9 months or a year.
Well, I understand that's only good for 2 years, for the next election cycle.
Oh, yeah.
And you can have somebody that comes in.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've heard me say many times, I mean, Bob, one of the phrases that Bob was famous for on here, the pendulum swings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when the pendulum swings,
amen.
Take a look at Richmond, take a look at Washington. Yeah. Nothing gets done.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the reasons we did not have those taxes, a people, and mm-hmm. et cetera, was because we were trying to attract businesses.
Absolutely. I think that's something, if we don't have a beep hole, that we can use to attract companies to come in here. But this is something that we can look at.
I mean, at some point, as we start getting more outsiders coming in,
mm-hmm.
I think that's where we're going to want to look at lodging and meals tax. I mean, right now, I'm sure we're missing out on lodging tax as it is for Airbnbs.
Right.
I was going to say...
Oh, that's goodness. Instead of a beep hole tax. That's
what
that
is. Yeah.
It's another merchant.
It's a different way to do it.
Yeah.
So actually, if you apply the merchant's capital, mm-hmm. then there's only.
And honestly, oddly enough, when I was going through things long time ago, I think Fluvanna had a merchant's capital tax at mm-hmm. one point, I believe.
What's a merchant's capital tax?
Definitely has a beep hole tax.
It's in that report.
Yeah, really? I don't know why you have that large as not having.
What's
that? Well, Almo has a beep hole tax. That report is good.
I know, because I pay it.
So,
well, sure
yeah, well, maybe that needs to be just updated and checked. But yeah,
I know, I pay it.
Yeah.
Do we have a time on this work session? Is it 8 o'clock? Are we trying to?
It's an hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
I think we're.
No, I mean, it's whatever.
Unless we want to look at the budget and start saying we want to look at cutting this or cutting this. I mean,
so what I'm good with is, I mean, I don't know yet completely where I'm at. I like that. So if we don't meet next Wednesday, the 5th is the next budget work session?
We'd have a budget work session after our meeting.
Yeah.
So we would have our regular meeting from 5 to 6:30-ish.
Yeah.
Go to break, close session, and then at 7 we do the work session.
So I've got more work to do. I am happy with us not meeting next Wednesday. I don't think there's enough to discuss as a group.
Man,
I won't be here if we do because I gotta be traveling.
Oh, good, let's have one.
You all heard it. And then let's just come back on the 5th and do some final.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing I can do, I can check from the commissioner to see if we can have additional values by April 5th.
I'm sure he'll find us another million.
A million?
That's powerful.
I was drinking at the meeting today. No. All right.
And what's the real question that we have? The whole budget? Are we still questioning the schools? Or what? What are we looking for?
It's open every line.
Tax, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Well, right now we're sitting here unless we decide we want to cut something.
Okay.
Now, I mean, we could cut fire and rescue somewhere. We could cut schools somewhere. They're the only ones that mm-hmm. that's really looking at bigger, larger numbers.
To me, the whole every line item is open, right?
Yeah, every line item is open, but I'm just talking about the big bites and stuff.
You're not gonna get a lot out of the commissioner of revenue's budget if you cut it. You know.
Oh Lord.
Okay.
The April 5th meeting mm-hmm. is. Can we? I don't know what's on it. Is would we be able to finish in an hour and a half?
Finish the regular meeting?
Yeah.
I mean, right now, we're looking pretty light at this point.
It depends on how much arguing we do.
Exactly.
So we're doing budget first, right?
No.
Oh, no, budget's last.
And if I'm in a fire,
5 o'clock regular meeting, then 7 p.m. work session.
All right, so you're going to make the 5 o'clock so that we can go in the back and get back at 7.
So the point is, we always try and make those first meetings that have an hour and a half, we always try and make them light and short, but...
Okay.
But sometimes they go long.
Okay.
I'm gonna tell y'all the sheet that I got today, because Dr. Gretz does a good job of talking about it and explaining it. But this actually has it broken down on the student teacher ratio per class, and I'm telling you, it's, you know, the high school has 1,400 kids, and I think they're saying, oh, they need 2.5 assistant principals. And no. Like I said, it's one assistant principal per 600 kids.
I guess from staff's perspective, is there anything that the board wants us to look into I think I hear that April 5th is when we're going to meet. We don't need next week. Is that the consensus I hear?
Yes. Right.
Okay. And so is there anything that we should be providing, anything you all want to see prior to that?
Well, if we come up, and this is one thing, we don't have to tell you now. I mean, if we think of something, we can call you and say, hey, look up this and give us the numbers on this.
What I would look at is not cutting, but adding.
We can't add.
No, ma'am. Well, we have to cut and add. Yes.
Oh, we rob Peter and pay Paul.
Yes, right.
Yes.
Who do you want to, where do you want to take it from?
I haven't decided yet, and I know where I want it to go.
All right.
I don't know how easy it would be to do that. This is would be my only request.
That's the good stuff. We've still got all this time to do it, but
go back to 2011, 12 budget, which whenever we did that huge drop, and prior to the drop, just keep it flat all the way across like the other counties have done. I don't know that you can do that easily, but that'd be curious to just see.
We couldn't do that because of the daggone reassessment where we waited 6 years. That was the real thing.
12, yeah.
And I'm saying if we kept the tax rate flat from there and what the excess would be every single year?
Yeah, for example, if we just took Fluvanna's tax rate of 88 cents, say at 50, or 79.5 cents,
yeah,
and it was just 88 cents all the way across the board.
You're sustainable tax rate.
Where would we be? And because that cumulative effect is pretty substantial. In that example, that's $1 million in a budget carried forward to the next year.
Right.
Well, that'd be $1.4 million right here.
So assuming that the expenditure budget was what
it was.
Keep everything the same.
Kept it the same. What was the excess going to fund balance every year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if we can get the fund balance in the surrounding counties.
And I remember when I first came on the board, that was a big conversation with sustainable tax rate.
I will give you a good quote from today.
Go ahead.
When they were looking at the LCI, and he goes, puts it up on the board, and there's blue over here, and there's blue over here, and then there's blue right in the middle. He goes, yeah, pretty much everywhere you see that blue, it's either a lot of government bases, or probably a Dominion power station.
Yeah.
And
we
had one. It's gone. It got blew up.
Yeah,
it sure did.
We were down there watching it, and the money go up in the smoke and dust.
Yeah, we still, because of the lines and things of that nature. See, that's another one, Chris. If we'd had a beep hole, I wonder how much it cost them to redo that power line.
Mm-hmm.
All those poles on that power line. When a big project like that happened, or who was it? Somebody called and said thank you on the Bremo Bridge. Don't know how much Bremo Bridge cost. But the Commissioner of Revenue, I think, called up and said, hey, just want to say thank you. Y'all don't have a beep pole.
What would be the beep pole on Firefly?
When do our tax incentives run out?
I'm just saying, if we were collecting it, we'd get all that money back.
I just asked a question. Now, we gave them tax incentives because we wanted to get internet to the entire county. And I'm telling you guys, when I walk into a meeting and it's little old podunk Fluvanna and we don't have water but in two or three places, and I go, well, we got 95% coverage with broadband, and they go, what? And I mean, that's Fairfax and Loudoun. I said, Phyllis is my buddy. And she's like, you got how much coverage? I said, well, if people want to get it, it's on the power lines. And we've just about got our entire county covered.
It's just that Mr. Wood, as he promised, he's got lowest the hookup for some families. He said he's getting there. Once he gets there.
Oh, when's the 5th?
The
5th. The 5th is the, that would be a good thing to show up at, but you're going to be out of town.
No, I'll be there.
Oh, you're going to be up there? I'm going to try to stop by. That's our spring break, so.
I'd say we should let these good people go home.
Okay.
Why? I don't think some of them would.
Motion to adjourn.
Anything else?
Motion.
Yeah. All right. It's been moved by Ms. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien, that we adjourn this meeting. Thank you all.
All in favor?
We call them.
Aye.
I know somebody's going to oppose.
No.